You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you had a great weekend. It was a Super Bowl loss for me. The Eagles did not win. Got to be honest with you. Text messaging with my sister and a bunch of people back east were like, when is the forthcoming documentary on games being fixed in the NFL? I'm telling you, I'm saying it now. I foresee this in the future. So just remember that when it comes out in the future, because I absolutely believe it has to be true. This episode is so great, speaking of sports, because I got to talk to one of the executive producers of a fantastic new Netflix docuseries called Full Swing. You guys, I loved it. So they are the same makers of F1 Drive to Survive, which is an incredible docuseries about Formula One racing, and this year's Breakpoint, which is about tennis. This is one of my favorite sports docuseries to date. So Full Swing is on Netflix. It is an immersive documentary series following a diverse group of professional golfers on and off the course across a relentless season of competition, enduring a high-stakes schedule week in and out on the PGA Tour. So the cameras follow, for the first time ever, all four of golf's major championships: the Masters at Augusta National, PGA Championship, US Open, and the Open Championship, in addition to the Players' Championship and the FedEx Cup playoffs. This documentary gives fans a chance to get to know the players through their wins and losses throughout a season on the tour. So you follow them to their homes. You get to see their workouts. I love that. I love to see what they're doing in their workouts. They open up about the most emotional moments of their careers, the mental game pressure, going from a top player to barely making a cut. I think if you love golf, you're going to love this. If you don't watch golf, you're going to love this. It is spectacularly done. Paul Martin is the executive producer. So grateful to get a chance to catch up with him this past week. Again, this is the team from Box to Box Films. They make outstanding sports docuseries. And it was so fun to hear how a series like this comes together and the chance to speak to some of the world's best athletes up close and personal, what that experience is like. Again, if you don't love golf, don't worry. You are going to be so sucked into this. By the end of the series, you're going to be like, when are we going to the next tournament? Who's going with me? So, so well done. Then in this episode, Chris DeRosa and I unravel Love is Blind After the Altar. This is the Netflix docuseries where you meet people through a wall and you get a chance to decide if you want to marry somebody that you've actually never seen in person. In this last three episodes that they posted for season three, you get to find out what happened all the months later after the show's aired. So Chris always makes me laugh so hard. He is a reality TV producer. So we talked about the episodes and then we were about to sign off. And then he asked me a perplexing question that made me laugh so hard that we had to include it at the end. And what I love about it is you get a window into our conversations throughout the week because we text about shows all the time. We were laughing so hard. But again, it's an important question. So I want you to listen to the end and tell me what you think because we think we might be onto a very interesting Bravo question. Outstanding stuff to watch this week. Full Swing on Netflix. This is not to be missed. I'm going to say it goes to one of the top shows of Netflix this week and probably the several weeks afterward. And then also on Netflix, Love is Blind After the Altar with Chris DeRosa. Always want to remind you to click on subscribe to leave a 5-star review so you get new episodes in your library all the time. So you know as soon as episodes pop up, as you know, I'm doing 4 episodes a week now, so you don't want to miss out on any of the episodes. And also sign up for my weekly must-watch newsletter by going to katecasey.substack.com. I love to hear how everyone's making sure that they share the list with everybody in their life. It's so helpful. And I promise you, I'm going to bring you the best of what is available in unscripted television every week. So here is my interview with Paul Martin and Chris DeRosa. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Paul Martin is co-founder at Box to Box Films. They specialize in outstanding high-end sports programming. He's an executive producer of the new Netflix series Full Swing, which centers around the world of professional golf and the PGA Tour. The past year has seen a radical shift in the sport as players seek glory outside of the PGA, causing the biggest divide among fans, professionals, and pundits in years. So this follows a group of golfers across the season of competition with action from the PGA Tour and all 4 of golf's major championships. You guys, I loved it. Even if you don't love golf, you're going to love this show. Paul, welcome.
Thank you. That's a glowing endorsement. I like that.
I really did love it. Well, I love F1 Drive to Survive. So you guys revolutionized F1, providing a candid and fascinating behind-the-scenes window into the sport. This year, you launched Breakpoint, which I also loved. In Full Swing, you're attempting the same with the sport of golf. How long has this project taken you to build?
The honest answer is we came onto it relatively late. We, you know, Chad, Mum, who was our... was an executive producer on the show with me and runs a company called Vox Studios. He's a golf nut. He's a really good golfer and he's a golf nut and he just lives and breathes the world. And he'd been around it for a long time. And for a long time, he'd floated the idea to the PGA and you know, the majors of, come on, let's do a behind the scenes dive. Let's really get under the skin of these guys. And I think it 4 or 5 years ago, these shows were not so in vogue and they mm-hmm. weren't, you know, not many people were really, you know, thinking about doing them. And I think that when Drive to Survive came along and the success that Drive to Survive had, both as a show, but also on the commercial business of Formula One, I think it just changed people's perspectives. And I think he suddenly found that they were much more receptive to the conversation than they had been. And, you know, he suddenly found himself in the position where they were saying, right, yeah, let's kind of do this. And I think to kind of Chad's credit and Netflix, they recognize that these shows are hard. They're very, very difficult to make. And, you know, we've obviously have a lot of experience in that space. And so we were sort of brought in, you know, just before the project got greenlit, I would say, just to kind of probably get some of the access over the line and just to really give a, you know, a perspective on how we could go about and make this thing. So it was probably in about December of last year, the year before, I started to get on a few Zooms with golfers. And I think, listen, I think James and I, who I run Box to Box with, I think we were maybe a little bit skeptical. We're not golf nuts, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a golf fan. I love the Ryder Cup. I love the Open, the Masters, all that stuff. But I'm not, you know, I'm not tuning in to, you know, I'd never even heard of the Waste Management, you know, Phoenix Open. So we weren't golf nuts. And I think we were maybe, my perception of golf was probably still stuck in probably the 90s, the likes of Nick Faldo and you know, all that kind of stuff. And listen, I love Nick, so I'm not going to say that wouldn't have been an interesting show. But I was just very skeptical about whether we, given what we'd done in kind of other sports and what we were doing, whether we could kind of go in there and find something that interested us, not as kind of golf nuts. And I think it was getting on the phone and getting on the Zoom with some of these characters. And you know, I said this before, but it was a Zoom conversation I had with Brooks Koepka that really made me go like, holy shit, this is, there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of really good stuff going on there.
Well, okay, so let's speak about Brooks for a minute. There's this incredible moment where, okay, so he's the guy that declining career at the moment you're talking to him. 4-time major winner, hunched over at a table in his kitchen with his wife and some friends. And he just looks up and says, it's like, I got a taste of it, right? And now it's all I want. It's all I want. And you really get a moment of perspective where the mental pressure is all encompassing. I mean, she's showing him her wedding dresses and he's just like, He's not present because he's so fixated on getting his game back. What's that like to be up close and present to that?
It's incredible. And it's incredible with someone like Brooks. You know, we after we'd had that Zoom with him, we then went out, Chad and I went out to the Bahamas, which sounds very glamorous, but we were stuck in a kind of a recording studio for about 3 days where we did about 24 interviews with various kind of golfers over a 2 or 3 day period. And Brooks was one of those where Brooks came in and, you know, and Brooks has got a rough reputation. You know, people say that he's tricky to, but he came in and from day one, that guy was like so open about all that stuff, about what he was working with, the fact that, you know, for 2 years, he was the best golfer on the planet, unquestionably. And now he said for the first time in his life, he was waking up in the middle of the night, worrying about his golf swing and worrying if he would ever kind of get it back. And to hear someone of Brooks's kind of stature really kind of go there and really open up in a way that sort of largely, you know, at that stage, you know, we're not even really prompting them for that stuff, you know, because we're just in that getting to know you phase, figuring out what it's all about. And I think that for Brooks, for it to suddenly just come pouring out in that way, just made you realize that whether you're a golf fan or not, you know, this stuff matters to them. This stuff is, you know, one of the questions that James and I had was Formula One clearly is, the stakes are about life and death. And how do you find the life and death stakes in golf? And what we kind of figured out is that for those guys, the golf, their golf swing and their ability to go out and perform in these golf tournaments is life and death. And when it starts to go wrong and it starts to unfold and it starts to unravel for them, they don't know where to turn. And they really are kind of up against it. And that's why you see so many of them that have this amazing trajectory and then it suddenly starts to go wrong and they just don't know what to do. They just don't know what to do with themselves. And I think we were incredibly you know, incredibly fortunate as producers to capture Brooks in that moment where he really is wrestling with how the hell do I deal with this? Because I've never had this before in my career.
It is extraordinary because if you watch sports interviews, you know, it's just like a short clip and athletes are often asked these kind of questions. Will you ever win another Super Bowl? Will you ever win another championship? And I feel like you got the human side of it that puts far more context to that question. And now I feel like, which is the great success of Formula One as well, is like, you look at them as a full person and you're cheering for them in a way that perhaps you didn't watch that sport. Maybe you were the person that sat on the couch and just begrudgingly watched different sports events, but now you're really rooting for them and you have the people who are in your life rooting for them as well, which I find to be enormously successful storytelling on your part.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's the nature of how we kind of consume sport is that kind of live element where we tune in on a, you know, a Sunday or a Saturday or whenever it is. And we just see these guys and girls go out and do what it is they're very, very good at. And I think the audience just becomes kind of immune to the fact that they're real kind of human beings and they're real people. And you know, like you and me, some days they don't want to get out of bed and go and do that thing. And some days they're not quite on it. And some days they're, and I think we lose perspective of that because we're, you know, with live sport, you're just so in the spectacle and so in the performance of it that you never stop to think, wow, I wonder if that guy, you know, I wonder if his wife left him today, or I wonder if his, you know, I wonder if he had a car crash on the way into training or something, whatever it is, you know, all the things that we know that happens in kind of people's lives. And I think, you know, these shows are not complicated. I think they are just about building these characters in a way so that even if you're not a fan of that sport, or even if you are a fan of that sport, you just start to see the athletes as three-dimensional people.
Right.
Much more so than just this thing that goes out and does this amazing thing every Sunday, you know, on in front of millions of people, because it's not that easy. You know, it's really not that easy to perform at that level week in, week out.
And truly, someone could be at the top of their game and then 2 months later, it's a whole different story. Also, really interesting to see the different workouts, the way that their homes are. I like Ian's house. I love to see him in England with his family. It just puts a whole other layer to their story. I love the relationship between Joel and his caddy. That was a great episode. And I also wanted to talk about how you were able to talk about how there's been a real shift in the industry. It's a turbulent era of men's golf. You've got this transcontinental multi-billion-dollar arms race. Tell me what it was like to film all the players sort of unraveling how they're going to handle this idea, this opportunity to be part of a Saudi-backed wealth fund and tournament opportunities.
I mean, it was mayhem at some of the tournaments, you know, particularly I think the US Open was probably the pinnacle of it in Boston, because I think that was the time that a lot of the players had got announced and you really knew who was going, who was staying, and you could tell that, you know, it was incredibly divisive, you know, and it was getting personal and stuff. I mean, when we started this show, we'd sort of heard rumors of there's this thing come in and it's going to disrupt golf. And then you'd speak to certain people who would say, look, every few years, someone with a ton of cash comes in and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. But inevitably, it kind of burns out. And I think it probably became clear, you know, probably around the Masters, that this thing was real and this thing was going to have an impact on golf, but also was going to have an impact on our show. And I think we, you know, we got to the stage where we couldn't ignore it, and nor did we want to ignore it, because it was what it was doing. It was giving, you know, it was giving real dilemmas to a number of our kind of characters, you know, Dustin, you know, Ian, Brooks, you know, even Rory, you know, got kind of pulled into it. And so we just took the view of, it's not really our job to debate the rights and the wrongs of, live golf and where the money comes from and where that those links are. That, you know, that's for other people to get involved in. All we wanted to do was show live golf from the perspective of how it was affecting our players. So you had someone like Dustin who was very upfront about, you know, why he went, and there wasn't really much second guessing. It's his perspective on it was, if someone comes along and offers you double the money for doing something you're already doing, take it. And if you don't, you're probably an idiot. And, you know, Brooks was, I think, much more conflicted about it. I think he went back and forth. You know, there were times where I thought he's definitely going to go. There was times I thought he's not going to go. And you know, and ultimately I understand, and I can understand his reasonings for why he went. Ian was the same. You know, Ian, I think you see that kind of dilemma of, you know, he realizes his career is coming to an end. He realizes that there's a substantial chunk of money being waved in front of him that you know, that really changes his family's lives forever, you know. And but equally, he's always wanted to be captain of the Ryder Cup, and that becomes a real dilemma for him. So we were just focused on that, of how does it affect our players and how does it affect them in terms of how they, you know, they approach the rest of the year. You know, we didn't set out to make a, you know, a documentary about kind of live golf, but you just couldn't ignore it.
No. But then also, is there this possibility that you could do another season because so many are entangled in an antitrust lawsuit? So the story continues to sort of play out.
Yeah, I think it's going to play out. And I think, you know, particularly at those majors, you know, I think at the majors, you're going to, you know, I mean, that for us, that if I'm selfish as a film and TV producer, which I am, you know, my dream scenario is that, you know, at Augusta, you've got Rory and Dustin going down the 18th in a straight shootout to win that green jacket. You know, I would love to see that. And, you know, we're great believers in, if you throw stuff out there, sometimes it manifests itself. So, you know, if the story gods are listening, you know, that's what we're wishing for. And, you know, that's purely me as a just getting really excited about how we could kind of show that kind of, you know, conflict. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen? I don't know. I think we learned last year to just, you know, take it kind of week by week and not always necessarily. There's a lot of rumors that go around. There's a lot of people that think they kind of know and don't know. And you just have to kind of just roll with it and just see where it takes you. So, you know, I hope we get the opportunity to continue with, you know, I hope we could get the opportunity to continue with the show full stop. But if we do, I certainly want Brooks and Dustin and Ian and those guys to be a part of it.
If any other golfer had second guesses about being a participant in this, I think that they will be elated for the opportunity to be a part of this. Because I think that ultimately, every player is likable. I mean, in each episode, I'm like, oh, okay, now I like that guy. Now I like that guy. However, the one I like the most, and the episode that you need to submit for awards, is the episode about Tony. And what I liked about it, and this comes as a working mother, is that I think we often talk about like the juggle of motherhood. And what I liked about that episode is that you're juggling career and fatherhood, especially if that father's in the spotlight. So first I want to say, well done on that one. Of all of the players that you followed, Is there one in particular that jumps out at you? Like there was an intimate moment with their family.
I mean, listen, I agree with you about the Tony episode. I mean, Tony's a phenomenal character, and his relationship with his family, you know, and the family backstory is extraordinary, you know. And I think, you know, I don't want to spoil it for people that don't know, because I think a lot of it's in that episode. But yeah, I mean, you just don't find people like Tony in golf. You know, he's a complete kind of one-off in terms of his background. And I love his dad. Like, I love that scene when they're at the Masters and they're just sort of walking down kind of Magnolia Lane and he goes to kind of sign in. And you can just see his dad kind of just kind of looking around and just having that moment of like, how the hell did we get here? Like, we shouldn't be here for a million reasons, but we're here and this is... You know, this is cool. And I loved his dad, and I love the reaction that his dad has to kind of the Masters. And I think that my other favorite character and moment, and I am biased because I'm from the UK, was Matty Fitzpatrick's win in the US Open, where, you know, the sort of, you know, as I said, I think at the US Open, the LIV Golf, the PGA was absolutely at its height. And, you know, there was all sorts of stuff kind of going on. And amongst it all, little Matty Fitzpatrick in his skeechers comes kind of sliding through and wins, you know, one of the biggest tournaments of the year in, you know, the most dramatic fashion. I mean, I walked the 18th with him, and I remember getting to the bunker where he put his ball, and, you know, listen, I'm a terrible golfer, but I looked at it, I was like, he's done, like, there's no way. And yeah, he just walked up and smashed that thing into the center of the green. And I, you know, I couldn't contain my emotion and excitement being there. And so that was an amazing moment. And I think Matt's going to win many, many more tournaments, because he's just got a fantastic kind of temperament and works incredibly hard. And so I'm really pleased that we were there to capture that.
I think this is an extraordinary series. You guys hit it out of the ballpark. You better come back and talk to me about F1. This is so good. It's called Full Swing. Premieres on Netflix on Wednesday, February 15th. There are 8 episodes. You will devour them. Paul Martin, thank you so much. Where can people find what you're working on?
Yeah, they can sort of check out what Box to Box is up to. I think we're on, I'm terrible at all this social media stuff. We're on Twitter. I think we're on Instagram, at LinkedIn, at boxtoboxfilms.com. No, Box to Box Films.
Well done, friend. Really great series.
Great. Thank you very much. Great to talk to you.
You too. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop, with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Chris DeRosa's back. Love is Blind aired 3 remaining episodes of season 3 After the Altar. So 30 contestants, 15 men and women from Dallas, went into speed dating pods so the couples could decide if they wanted to get engaged, still sight unseen, and end their relationships for a better connection, or stay with the person that they met in the pods that they felt most connected to. Then, if they got engaged, the couples get to meet face-to-face for the first time and go on a honeymoon where they learn more about each other, and they also meet the other couples. After that trip, the couples return to the real world, and in this case was Dallas, Texas, move into an apartment together as they meet each other's families and friends and prepare for their weddings. Then, on the wedding day, they meet each other at the altar and they find out if the other person wants to actually marry them. The couples have to decide whether to marry or break up as they answer the age-old question, can love truly be blind? Chris DeRosa, 3 extra episodes. Were you delighted to find out it was in the queue of your Netflix account?
Well, you're, of course, the one that tells me what I really need to watch. And so you're the one that told me this. But yes, I was excited. I love, because like I feel like every, as I always say, that this is the only dating show that I really like. I love that you can actually like now find out like how they're doing. I like this after the altar, like these little episodes, because like The Bachelor, it's like, okay, they say yes. And like, God only knows if they ever even remotely even see each other ever again. This is like a good follow-up and you see like, is their relationship thriving? Is it not? Like, are they talking? Are the exes talking, the ones that said no to each other? Like, I'm so into it. Alexa and Brennan having their families together at Alexa's dad's house. Mm-hmm. Like, loved Alexa sitting down with her stepmother that's her same age. Like, love all of that.
So let's start with the couples. Okay, Matt and Colleen still don't live together. Are you worried about this couple?
Okay, I'm going to say no because he said that it was $5,000 for them like to break their leases, which I think is crazy. But if that is true, I completely understand why they don't live together. That's a lot of money.
Their problem is they don't explain themselves well. If they are in fact going to go the distance, they don't do a good enough job of selling to the audience the reasons for them staying together or not living together.
You're asking a lot of them to do that. I think they like each other. I think they're going to be fine. I think that they're doing, I think they're very immature. And so they're doing very immature things in their relationship. But I think, I don't know. I think they like each other.
I don't see this one working out. I'm going to
say really?
They stay together for another 10 to 12 months and then they call it quits. I don't see them ever moving in together ever.
I think that they need to, you know, I mean, you've been in a relationship for a very long time. If you could think back to like when you first were in a relationship, all the things that you thought that you wanted, or you thought like things that you were like, this bothers me, or here's these deal breakers. Like those are so different once you're 5 years into a relationship. I feel like they need to just like, mature in that way and be like, oh, all these stupid things that like having the dog get neutered, like that's not a real barrier to my relationship.
Oh, but that did sound awful. Like she's going to bed at night. Oh,
yeah, it sounded awful, but like those things are fixable. Like you can just do that. Like, you know.
I also get this sneaking suspicion that the other women secretly think that he's a disaster and she should not be with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think they are all kind of like, Colleen, wake up. Like, come on. Yeah. And I think the other guys think it's bullshit that they don't live together either.
Yeah, maybe I'm giving them too much of a benefit of the doubt, but like...
I think you are.
Yeah, I think I am too.
Zainab and Cole, of course, they didn't get engaged. What did you think about the idea of them being reunited?
I have to back it up and just say, she looks so beautiful.
Yeah, she's pretty.
Like a true glow up too. But like even just like from seeing herself on television and then coming back stronger, like truly looks great. I think she's such a catch. I'm like so obsessed with her. He looks exactly the same. He is just so like a puppy dog. Like he's just like a Labrador. That's like what he is.
I feel like he's Ramona Singer and she's Bethany Frankel. So watching those two come together and have a conversation, like, he just says dumb stuff all the time. Like, when he's talking to Alexa's stepmom and he just cannot get over how hot she is.
I'm dying laughing.
Yeah. And then at the end of the episode where he's like, I just really want to meet somebody who's sweet and fun and looks great in a bikini. It's like, dude, you have just been ripped on because you make comments about the way a woman looks all the time. He is Ramona. Like, he has no understanding of the stuff he says.
I don't even think it's that. I think he just, he truly doesn't know what he's saying is hurtful. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, I never said anything horrible to you, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, are you kidding me? They just were never going to work. And then the biggest thing about it is that he's like, I thought once we said no, like we were just going to still date. Like he was so blindsided by her saying no and like eviscerating him in the best way I've ever seen in my life at the altar. Like they were just on such different pages that like, if that was ever me, I would be like, wait, we really need to take it like three steps back now because like, we're not even remotely on the same page about this. He's a perfect person to be on a dating show because he's like really cute. So girls will immediately like him. And he also has no filter and doesn't, and is always putting his foot in his mouth. That's like what we want as a, you know, on our televisions, is it not?
No, truly. Okay. Yeah. Nancy and Bartice. Nancy got way too dressed up for a guy who stop thinking about her 5 minutes after the show.
I want to take her by the shoulders and just shake her like a rag doll. Like, I want to shit and be like, what are you doing? One, she also is like, keeps the door open. And I'm like, for what?
Right.
You can be friends. Like, what do you, for what?
Yeah.
Like, for what? And I love that when they're in their little like confrontation, he like, he's such like a, and I literally don't use this term ever, but he really is like such a gaslighter. Like where he's like, you know what I mean? I use that term very sparingly because I know it's so overused, but he will literally be like, we did nothing but the best things together. And she, and like, meanwhile, he's like embarrassed her over and over and over and over and over again. And like to her face said that he like was attracted to like everyone else but her.
The one thing that people need to remember is that when they were doing throughout the filming of their regular season, and whenever she would talk about her business, and she's very successful in her own right, and he's, I think, in money management, but at a lower level, he kept saying things like, yeah, we can do these deals together. I felt like he immediately sucked onto her business, which was the biggest red flag for me.
100%. And she was like, well, here's like my 6 properties. And he was like, oh, like his eyes like came out of his thing, like on Looney Tunes, like a wooga. Like literally, like he was like, remember he was like, oh, I've never had this much money. Or like, well, like he was like, couldn't speak because she was like really successful. And like I liked him so much in the first episode and I hate him so much. that conversation he had with her was not okay with me. That he was trying to act like they were friends and they were this and they were that. I'm like, you are nothing.
Well, I kept thinking during the season, this guy is already planning their combined name to join forces to be in an ad that's spray painted on the side of a bus or like a Kia.
Yes. Mm. Or a Kia. How dare you?
So then we have Alexa and Brennan. I feel like this couple tries to oversell how happy they are. I actually don't know if they're going to work out. And I know that people just spit out their coffee around the world. Someone just hit a tree. There are people who fell off a skateboard. There's an aisle right now filled with pasta on the ground. I think they're trying to oversell it. And I don't think they're actually going to work out.
Okay. But here's my counterpoint to that. They are the most real that I've seen.
Real in the way that she runs his life. His parents are highly concerned. She and her father are the similar personalities, like ball busters, no filter.
But we knew that going into it.
I know, but I still think they're trying to oversell us. The way that he's walking around the block, clutching her hand with the small dog on the leash, with his backpack on. I feel like he's a shell of the person that he was when he started the show. I don't know if they can maintain this charade, if you will, after there's a new set of couples that become international superstars.
Okay. I don't know. I love her. I think she is like us. Like she is our window into like...
No, I like her. I don't like them together.
Oh, I kind of do. I think it was like fun when his family came over and they did like they were doing like Shabbat together. And like her dad was saying something about his penis. And I was like disgusted. But then also I was like, I think her dad is like such a pervert, but then I'm also attracted to him.
Well, he is very like, hot.
He's like very attractive. But then also they were at it was at her birthday party where it was like something. And he was like, that's in my pants or something. And I was like, ew.
Well, Brennan said, my relationship with my father-in-law is very vulgar. And I went, I don't know. It's like the couple that just got married and went on a honeymoon and came back and wants to write a book about how their tricks to marriage.
Yeah. Saying this, I'm literally transitioning to one of my notes, which is like, this could be a show of just them. Like these couples could just be a show, in my opinion. Like when it was the 5 girls sitting down, I was like, this is a housewives scene. Like you have your archetype of each person. You have Alexa, who's like the main one that kind of like holds the group together. You have Zainab, who's like still like looking for love and she's like hot and she's like a business lady. You have Colleen, who's like very like traditional and kind of like the cute one. You have Raven, who's like the sexy one, who's like, you know, can't find love and like can't pick the right guy. You have everything you need for a show. Like I was, they were all together and it was just the ladies together, I was so into that. And I was like, this is a show.
So you, what you're saying is like it's pre-Housewives. I mean, you could all also call it, you could call it the pre-Real Housewives of Dallas.
Sure. Like, you know what I mean? It could, I mean, it could be like Love is Blind colon, like, you know, life after life after the pods or something. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like, but like them as a, like they're a show. They could do it. If all the girls went out on a girls' night and like talked about more things than just their relationships, like that could be, they're in, I'm into them.
Okay, so you're executive producer of this. I'm kind of into it because I do like that they're all very supportive of one another.
Yeah, like they have a bond that like the bond that like we hope on a Housewives is like the women that know each other beforehand that like come in with like a relationship already. They have that now. So like there's something about it. I don't know, I'm into them. I when they did their little like group scenes, I was like this isn't like as forced as it could be.
But I'm telling you, on season 3 of the pre-Real Housewives of Dallas, it's announced that Alexa and Brennan are getting a divorce.
Yeah, that's fine. Hello, what are we here for? Like, that's what the show is.
I would watch the women. I think when you put it into that context, a lot of those husbands, spouses, partners need to be kicked off the show because they're—
Well, the men can, Brennan, like, come in. Yeah.
Brennan is very PK. So I like that for 2 seasons before they announce their divorce. But I just don't think Matt can bring to the table what I need for a pre-Real Housewives of Dallas.
No, which is, he can just be there sometimes.
Okay.
Know what I mean? Like, it's not about—
I'd like for her to fall in love with the hottest ballet dancer at the conservatory in Dallas.
Stop, I'm dead.
And that she has to tell him, although we've never lived together and we were thinking about maybe buying a house in Houston because of your financial requirements, I am in fact in love with the guy named Sasha, who's actually from Russia.
Russia. And, I was going to say Russian.
And this is going to be smooth sailing for us because we never actually combined finances.
Yeah, we're good. Like we are, we're like, yeah. That's hilarious. See, but like this could all be documented on the pre-Real Housewives of Dallas.
I love this. Okay. Well, that brings us to the most housewifey story of all, which is that Raven and SK got re-engaged only for her to find out that he was cheating. And this all played out on social media. We watched it all unfold.
I mean, oh, it's like hard. I feel bad because I really like Raven and I really think she's really cool. And like, despite her just like always be doing Pilates no matter what, like she's at least loyal to like her craft. She like, I really feel for her because I feel like she just like shows up and is like, I am who I am and isn't like bending to anyone. And it's just being very upfront and just very like on, like loyal to herself. And she just gets fucking railroaded. Like no matter, like she's just like constantly getting like hit by a fucking semi truck.
I don't know why she didn't see this coming. I mean, the fact that he was so cagey about his life outside of the show.
But also,
and he kept making it very clear, like, I'm a student. It seemed like he was doing some serious stuff on the side. I just think you can't be on a show and then expect to get engaged on Love is Blind and then live in separate states.
No. And I think also, too, it's like, was she just like, okay, we'll just like take this really slow and like we'll let him be in school? And like, she doesn't seem very like, from everything she's told us in the season, she wasn't like, I'm on dates every night, I'm going out all the time. Like, she's a very like, I don't think, despite how she looked, we all perceive that she would be like literally getting her everything paid for every day of her life. I don't feel like she goes on a lot of dates. So I feel like she's just like, oh, this is like there. You know what I mean? I kind of feel like she was just like whatever about it. And then he was like doing whatever he was doing. And she kind of was like, when he comes, we have a great time. And then he leaves. And then we talk on the phone every other day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think she kind of was like, and like, obviously it's embarrassing and she's upset about it. But I don't think she was like being like, let's go down the aisle in 2 days. Meanwhile, he's proposing to her on the show. And I'm like, what is happening? Wait, what actually happened though?
They put out a joint statement in November of 2022. Raven and SK confirmed they had broken up after the cheating rumors. We are saddened to announce that we have decided to go our separate ways. Due to ongoing legal proceedings surrounding these allegations, we cannot provide additional details and ask that you please respect our privacy during this hard time. Thank you for following our love story, blah, blah, blah. What in the world is due to ongoing legal proceedings surrounding these allegations?
It's a way for them to not have to say anything, which is also fucked because she's protecting him.
Yes. Well, I feel like she does that too much. So I think...
I'm also annoyed. Wait, I'm also annoyed that they don't have to have him. He should have had to interview and explain it on the show.
Agreed. But do you think he was like, I don't care about the extra $1,500. Like, I just want to call it a day. It's probably not that much money.
Probably isn't that much money. You're right. That's so fun. Yes, but like, it's I want him, I wish he would have to like come on screen and be like, I cheated on her with like 17 people.
Speaking of which, if it's, let's say it's $1,500, the amount of money that Nancy and the others put into the makeup, the hair, the dress.
Gone. Gone, baby, gone.
So it just cancels out. So what's the point of the whole thing?
I know. They liked it. They could have a show. They have, the point of it is that people like me are going to watch them and be like, they're having a great time. And they could be a show.
Do you think that the season 3 cast members are white knuckling it, afraid that the season 4 Love is Blind cast will be much more entertaining than them, and thereby they lose out on opportunities because no one cares about them anymore?
No, I don't know. No, because I feel like they know that this is kind of like the end of the road now. Like we've seen in the last 2 seasons that this is kind of correct. But like this is kind of it. You do the After the Altar and then it's done.
You know what they need to do? End of like the last of the 3 episodes of After the Altar, they play that. What is that? Who sings that song? Boys to Men song. And now we've come to the end of the road. And you and they just walk out into the distance.
What are you talking?
Like, we will never hear from you. We know that you're not going to care about us on social media anymore. But thank you for the 750,000 of you who followed me for the time being.
Yeah. I would have watched more episodes of the After the Altar.
I don't think I did.
You wouldn't have? I don't know. I'm into them. I would love to see them like, just like what, like, yes, you see like Alexa and Brennan are like at their dad's house and it's like the scene we all want. But like, where are they? I just want to see them doing their laundry together. Like, I wish there was like one more episode and it was a little bit of like the people in there. Or like, I want to see that dog humping everything.
You know what else is going to be the death of that relationship is he had to explain to her what a bill is.
Yo, that was hilarious.
That's tough.
No, of course it is, because her dad's rich, so he pays all her bills for her. Wait, what other notes do I?
Do you think he really still pays her bills? Isn't she like 28?
Yeah, but yes.
Oh, God, I got the wrong parents.
Me too.
I think we may have hit the limit on the gold chalices.
I'm over the gold chalices, like hardcore.
And I also would like to hear interviews with the people that are in their lives that are not on the show. Like, I want one of Alexa's friends or one of Brendan's friends to go, I haven't heard from them for a year. Like, we're not in the circle of trust. They're always at her dad's house. Raven is the only friend that they actually talked, or, you know, Zainab and Raven are the only ones that Alexa cares about now. Now that they're big time celebrities, they don't care about us. I would like a little bit more of that too.
This is the real pre-Housewives of Dallas again. Like, I want Nancy's brother to come in at Alex's birthday party and confront Bartice and be like, get the fuck out. Like, I'm into that. Like, yeah. I want, there's enough here. We have a show on our hands.
Well,
we as in not us. Netflix has a
show. You're welcome, Netflix, for, because again, I really believe that you gave them the idea for the romance show. So once again, you're welcome, Netflix.
We're going to have to take legal action. If they bring that out, we're really going to have to do something because it's like too much.
We can use the same lawyer that SK and Raven are using to handle the ongoing legal proceedings allegations of the TikTokers that discovered that SK was cheating on her. Once again, you've hit it out of the park. I don't know how you do it, but you do it each time. Chris DeRosa, you are a real delight for the whole world. And I salute your hard work in reality television programming. I enjoy hearing your voice in the background and different scenes of shows that you work on. I can see the touch you bring to each episode. And for that, I salute you always. Tell everybody where they can find you and tell them about your upcoming podcast, which is, I believe, going to be absolutely piss your pants hilarious.
Thank you so much. First of all, you will be one of the first guests that once we get off this Zoom, I'm going to ask you if you want to do one of the first episodes. But you can find me at The Chris DeRosa. The new podcast is called Fixing Famous People. Me and my co-host Dominic Pupa are going to be basically telling these people, like, for example, Raven and SK, like, we might go to them and be like, hey, here's how you spin this to make it better. And here's how you, Bartice would be a great person. Mm-hmm. To like be kind of like a subject of one of our shows where we basically are going to tell the world what we think celebrities should do to like up their like, you know, their social barometer and kind of like get their reputation back on track. And so basically I'll have an idea, Dom will have an idea, and then people like you, Kate Casey, are going to come on and decide whose idea they think is better. And that's what the podcast is about. And it's funny because I actually, you're the person that gave me the idea for the podcast, because when we were talking about Meghan and Harry, I said, if you gave me 15 minutes in room with them, she would be running the country. And you said, that is your podcast to me when we were talking off mic. And now here it is. So thank you for giving me the idea.
It is such a funny idea. I cannot, first of all, I hope that you tackle Harry and Meghan, because I feel like your input would be enormously helpful to them. And if you look at the picture that you put together, I'm also already peeing my pants about it. The graphic for the podcast is just the tip of the iceberg. This is going to be so great.
We are really, really excited. So yeah, it's called Fixing Famous People. The trailer is out right now. You can find it anywhere you find podcasts. Subscribe. We're hoping like March 1st is like our drop dead date to release it. So it's going to be coming in a couple weeks. And yeah, you're going to hear Kate Casey on an episode very, very soon.
Wait, Chris, before we go, we've decided there's a new story to be told, a potential true crime docuseries. Tell everybody what you asked me a question. What was it?
Okay. Guys. How on earth is Lisa Vanderpump's dog Jiggy still alive? I know this sounds like a stupid question, but you need to think about it.
Yeah.
How on earth is that dog still alive?
Yeah, because when did the show premiere?
I was in college, 11? So that would have been at least like 2011 sounds
yeah,
right.
Yeah, 2011.
Yes.
So Jiggy at that point may have been, 6 years old?
Even if Jiggy was a puppy.
Right.
That was, 12 years ago?
Yeah. Is it possible that... dog experts, if you're listening, he's a Pomeranian, right? Do Pomeranians live that long? Is it possible that he died? And if he did die, I'm going to say he died from suffocation from the tuxedo top. Did they get another Jiggy and swap him out? And we had no idea.
Now, my theory is that he's been cloned like Barbara Streisand's dogs. Like that they just took his DNA and like cloned him and made a new dog. And then it's just Jiggy number two, but they just didn't say anything.
Does she have that much money she would do that?
I don't know. But like, there's no way that Jiggy is alive. Like, there's no way that Jiggy... Now watch, we're going to go on her Instagram and she's going to be like, we're going to look back like 4 posts and it's like Jiggy died like 2 years ago. But I'm pretty sure in the new season of Vanderpump Rules, like she's holding Jiggy in like the beginning.
Right.
And like, there's no way that Jiggy's alive. Like, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. Remember at Adrian's whenever like Ken was like letting the dog drink out of her like really nice like crystal glasses.
Oh, wait. Do you remember when Adrian washed her chicken with
chicken,
soap?
Yeah, love it. That was great. I think that was literally the same episode. No, but like, is Jiggy alive? Like, what's, like where's Jiggy? Like, that's like, where's Jiggy? Hashtag. Like, that's a true crime doc I would watch. Because like, there's no way this is this is the same Jiggy.
We need to do interviews with the people who work at the vet. It's gonna be the receptionist, and she's gonna be like, I haven't been able to talk to anybody in years about this. Thank God somebody finally has asked me the question that has to be answered.
No, and I'm like, haha, we're laughing, but like, I'm dead serious.
Why didn't she ever name a restaurant after the dog?
I don't know. That was a really fucking good idea.
Yeah. Why isn't it called Jiggy's?
Jiggy's.
Getting jiggy with it. It's like a nightclub and a restaurant. Yes. It's a restaurant that serves enchiladas, but at 8 p.m. they play disco music.
Well, that's every one of her restaurants. If you like go to Sir, it's like there's like basically a club in the freaking like little bar that you sit at that has 4 chairs.
Can I tell you something? I got a meal there one time. I was pregnant. It wasn't great.
Okay, I have a better story. We went there. It was right as season one was airing. And we went there and we sat in the like beginning. We sat in like the bar area and had the goat cheese balls. That they like loved. They were disgusting. And yeah. I love goat cheese. So like it should be right up my alley. They were fucking vile. And Stassi was our waitress and she brought us the wrong drinks. And I have a photograph with Stassi. Like season one Stassi was our waitress.
Who was the bartender?
Unnamed, like unclear, like not a pumper.
does that person put on their resume that they were a bartender there? Or do they just close that chapter and never talk about it?
I don't, and never look back.
I wasn't chosen to be season one of Vanderpump Rules.
And then I went back in like to LA in like 2019, I'm going to say, or like 18. And we went back to Sur just to like, because we were in that area and we went, we're like, ha ha ha, let's get a drink here. And I got a pumptini and it was the just most disgusting thing I've ever had.
Well, of course it was. It's a pumptini. What the hell is that?
I don't know what I'm saying.
A pumptini is gin and all
the... No, it was vodka. And then literally they took raspberries and like literally just crushed them in their hand and threw it in the drink. That was what it was. I swear on everything. I swear to God, that is what it was.
Stop.
I wish I was joking.
Oh my God.
You have to put this in there.
I thought you were going to say it was gin. And then they took the dish rag and like squeegee.
I wish that's what it was.
With juniper berries.
No, I was chewing it. I swear to God, there was literally raspberries, like whole raspberries. Oh my God. And like, I don't drink vodka. So obviously I ordered mine with gin. And then like, obviously when it was given to me, it was clearly vodka. And I was like, I'm just drinking this. Like, I don't know.
Oh my God. Oh yeah. Wow. A pump. I feel like they did talk about that on the show.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is too much. Also, they treated me so terribly because I was pregnant. It was like, hot girls need to be in the front of the restaurant.
It's like, how fucking dare you come in here?
So they pushed me into a corner.
I'm sure.
My God, yeah.
You were probably sitting out in the back where they used to like have all their best scenes where they would be like by the dumpster, like smoking a cigarette. Yes.
That's basically how I was treated. You know where I was? I was in the corner and it was behind the plastic flower wall where they would let people take pictures outside of the restaurant.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. It was like one of those vines was like poking my head the whole time. Oh my God. That's too good. Wow.
Okay. So our new documentary, Where's Jiggy, is coming out.
And then the restaurant should be called Getting Jiggy With It.
Getting Jiggy With It. I just like jiggies. And then the hashtag is Getting Jiggy With It.
Getting Jiggy With It. Well, thank you. Okay. We're done.
God. You have to put this in the show. <I am.
laughs> Just crushed it.
I wish I was joking with you.
I want to thank my great guests, Paul and Chris, and remind you again to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, follow me on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. You can find me on Instagram at Kate Casey CA, TikTok, It's Kate Casey. You can, again, get my must-watch list by going to katecasey.substack.com and Patreon for bonus episodes. Go to Patreon. patreon.com/KateCasey. And I've got one upcoming with Jonathan that you don't want to miss. So patreon.com/KateCasey. Make sure that you are catching up on all the old episodes. I've got so many great upcoming guests. This week you will hear from two of the Real Housewives of Miami, a director of an outstanding true crime docuseries on Showtime. And also I'm going to be interviewing the creator and one of the three hilarious comedians that were involved in one of the best MTV shows called Buzzkill.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.